Well, our friends at CBD MD, a trusted leader in the CBD industry, they're committed to providing you with natural support. All the products are THC-free, so you don't have to worry about those rewarding effects that give you those risks. CBD MD Premium CBD is produced from ethically sourced U.S.-grown hemp. They utilize independent third-party testing for safety, purity, and effectiveness to ensure they deliver only the highest quality products. Full line of premium CBD products ranging from classic CBD oil tinctures to gummies, sleep products, topical creams, even CBD for your pets. I've given my dog CBD, and I've used the topicals. They kind of work. And I had a patient just this morning using the CBD cream on her ankle with older patient with osteoarthritis. Good effect. You can even call them up or chat with them through their website, cbdmd.com. Before you buy, they're happy to answer any questions. And to make CBD accessible to everyone, CBD MD is offering our listeners 20% off when you use the code GRILL at checkout, G-R-I-L-L. So use it's a very different code than we normally use. So check it out. It is cbdmd.com. Check out code GRILL. One more time, GRILL at cbdmd.com for 20% off your next order of premium CD products from CBD MD. Hey, welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast, everybody. And be sure to support those that support us. Check out the Amazon banner at drdrew.com. And we try to carefully support those people that keep the winds in the sail, the coral of pirate ship. We are proud of the people that we present. And please support them so they can support us and we can keep doing this thing. It's my privilege to welcome our friend Jordan Harbinger to the show.
Yeah.
Jordan Harbinger Podcast. That's what you call the podcast
that is,
now?
Well, it's a Jordan Harbinger show. But I wish I'd named it the Jordan Harbinger Podcast, because what happens is I go, hey, do you listen to the Jordan Harbinger show? And they go, no, how do I get it? And they go, well, it's a podcast. And they go, well, why don't you just say that?
Why don't you say it was a podcast?
And I'm like, I know. I wish I had.
So what's going on with that show these days? What are you working on?
I'm stoked
what's
because,
coming?
Well, I started over recently. I had this old show that I did for like 11 years, and I had to start over, and I thought
The Art of Charm.
Yeah, yeah, well. The show that shall not be named.
I'm not allowed. Okay, can't name it. It's like a serial killer.
That's right. It's like Voldemort, right? Oh, shoot. Yeah, well, I just did it, so I understand this is the sentiment. But I restarted it in February of last year, and it's been, I don't know, 18 months-ish, and it's bigger now than the old show ever was. It's been 18 months. It's bigger than the other one was in 11
Congratulations.
Years. Thank you. It's surprising to me as well. Because I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought it was going to take me 5-plus years to rebuild it. So it's nice. It's 6.1 million downloads this month.
Oh, my God.
Well, in the last 30 days.
Crazy. It's fantastic. Yeah. And particular guests that have stood out?
You know, I had Howie Mandel on.
Excellent.
Which I thought he was – here's the thing. I'm not like, oh, he's such a funny guy. I got to have him on. He was so open and authentic, and that's what really made the show, right? Mm-hmm. Like when I had you on the show, you talked about things and you didn't go, well, crap, I got to look good. I got to answer this in the right way.
No.
And he did the same thing. And it's rare. It's rare to find somebody
really?
Who's in the spotlight, especially like you guys are, who's going to go, I'm just going to answer this how I feel, rather than, ooh, what's going to reflect best on me.
Really?
Yeah, it's rare.
I thought authenticity was a important sort of quality these days.
It's a buzzword. I wouldn't say that the actual trait of authenticity is important. I think people say it's important, and then they go, and then they pull the Dr. Phil thing where they're like, wear the mask no matter what.
Wasn't that crazy?
Well, tell me about that. You mentioned that before, and I went, well, what does he even mean?
I don't know. I know that I don't want to be critical, but severe narcissists, that's the way they think. They think they put on what's called a pseudo self to protect themselves from the outside world. And they daren't show their tender inside because it's usually small and diminished and easily hurt and feeling a lot of shame and that kind of thing. And so, I mean, that is the opposite of a healthy recommendation. I was like, oh my God.
To hear somebody
– I just don't want to play it, but I'll send it to you. It was – I really was shocked. Maybe I misinterpreted what he was saying, but
I don't know. I didn't hear. But I mean, to hear somebody who is a public figure who is supposed to be like a professional in some way, tell other people, "Hey, put on a mask and never take it off." That's so weird,
right? It's incredible.
You think you would know to avoid that? That's kind of like someone who goes, "Hey, you're not that fun."
Well, I don't
do cocaine all the time and just do it all the time.
Whatever you do, don't stop.
Yeah,
but I don't think he would have thought of it as that what he was recommending. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't think that's what he. I think he thought he was like saying, "Put on a suit of armor and never let anybody see you you know, blink or choke or don't show your weakness. Still, I think that's though, what I thought he was kind of saying, but it came off as build a
fake self.
My mom was crazy, and she used to chant that stuff for me, so I'm very sensitive.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ugh. My mom used to go, have a person, build a personality. You need a personality. Where's your personality? You just show a personality. I'm like, that you are crazy, bitch. It's like, that is a scary
thing. You and know, you were raised by that.
Screaming at me when I was a little kid. And that was sort of one of the things. My generation was very involved in phony. Anything that was phony, we were super sensitive to.
But you have a great personality now. Do you? How much of what you exhibit now on the radio do you say is like, eh, this is real, it's how I am all the time?
It's how I am all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to be.
I feel like it is. I know you offline too.
Yeah.
And I don't see like, oh man, if you have find him online, he's different than
No,
I don't see that at all.
I just don't know how else to be. And because I had the crazy mom who was – you know, talking about a pseudo self rather than talking about my spontaneous internal world. I didn't have a very good connection to that, and it took a lot of therapy to get that connection underway, which I did. And,
that's good. You know, did you do analysis or what did you do?
I did emotionally focused therapy, essentially, EFT.
Yeah.
And my therapist became an analyst because my fantasy is, of course, she had great boundaries. She would never tell me.
Sure.
My fantasy is I drove her to become an analyst because I kept going, let's go deeper, I want more. You know.
That's fun. You made your therapist become the therapist you needed.
Well, not that. It's just I got her interested in deeper material, I thought. And, you know, who knows? I have no idea because she was too – good with the boundaries too.
What is EFT? That's not the tapping one, is it?
No.
Because people conflate that.
EFT is just a highly attuned professional. It's a very skilled individual who is attuning to your every moment, bodily-based moment.
Terrify me.
Right. And so and then they reflect on their face back. They don't really have a lot of words. They just reflect appreciation of your internal states. And that gives you the capacity to connect to some of those. I mean, I would start – it took me years to start every session with I'm feeling, and I would just go, here's what I'm feeling. Because I wouldn't walk through the world with that. But in therapy, I would start with I'm feeling frustrated, and I just start going into whatever was going on in my body.
Yeah.
And that was very different than anything
I'd
ever experienced.
Lord. Every session would start the same for me. Feeling like other people are ahead of me and that I'll never catch
up. Yeah, but that's not a feeling.
Oh, shoot.
I'm feeling frustrated.
Maybe not afraid. What am I feeling?
Okay, so do it for real. So in real, I would be attuning to you while you tried to find your feeling.
Well, so, see, the problem is right now I feel awesome because whenever I hang out with you guys, Adam and Drew, I'm like, well, I have approval of two amazing people, so I'm obviously doing everything right. I feel awesome.
Well, I feel your awesomeness.
Yeah.
But I also feel it's not anxiety.
It's IPA from it's Endless Rant IPA.
Is it perfectionism? Is that your thing? Is it?
No, I need some of that. For me, the problem is it's weird. Until when my business was the other one, I didn't really care about much. I was depressed because I was always working with people that I didn't like. Mm. That was a huge problem. Mm. But then when I had to start over, I felt like I was so far behind because I had spent 11 years building up one, and I felt like I'm never going to catch up.
Okay,
so I was a little scared about
that.
So
the feeling I was having, strangely, right in the middle of my stomach, was like somebody running.
I'm always running.
Like running.
When you wake up running.
And when you say catch up, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Like you're always trying to catch up. I'm trying to always to run.
Oh, I got to do Instagram.
And so that's attunement. That's attunement. And then me going, well, I feel a little like a homunculus running in my stomach. Does that relate to you?
Yeah, but I don't feel that particular feeling. What I feel is I'm behind, and if I don't catch up in every area, like, oh, I got to do social media, got to work on this skill set, got to work on my marketing, got to come up with a product. If I don't do that, I feel, and this is because of all the marketing I'm consuming, especially on social media, which is why it's bad for you, that I go, uh-oh, I'm never going to amount to my full potential, and that terrifies me because I see so many people that I don't want to be like who are those same people.
So terrified is a pretty powerful feeling. I don't feel it as something that's present in the moment,
No, but now I'm great.
Right. But yeah. I feel the running, and you're probably running from or to, and that's usually a fear.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm running from the idea that I might just, here's the problem. I'm worried that the person I thought I was when I was in high school and before, and in college is the person that I really am. And I really don't want to believe that. Quiet, shy, nerdy. I'm still nerdy, but somebody, and you know, it's, and
didn't law school to take care of the quiet?
Law school?
No.
No. Oh, right. I was a try-hard D-bag in law school. So yeah, maybe it did, but it was a process.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is there are people that knew me back then that I'll run into them on the subway in New York or at some other thing or just because we stayed friends, and they'll go, that was never my opinion of you. And I'll go, how could it not have been that you saw me as whatever I saw myself at the time? And they go, no, I mean, all of us thought you were like really funny and outgoing. And I'm
right. So felt a certain way.
So I felt a certain way. Yeah. And yet what I'm about to say is, well, I had everyone fooled. But here's the thing. Are you who you think you are, or are you who everyone else experiences? Which one is
it? Well, during your adolescence, you're not a fully formed human yet, right? You're still all kinds of things. And usually the feelings are highly dependent on peers and peer approval.
Sure.
And it's built on a lot of anxiety and a lot of uncertainty and a lot of insecurity. And so everybody has distorted ideas about themselves and other people. And really everyone's walking around worrying about themselves.
It's crazy though to see how far apart it is, right? Like the times where I thought I was the biggest, quietest, nerdiest loser are the times where I'll run into my friend Dan from law school and I'll go, yeah, you know, that was a dark time for me this first year of law school because da 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 da. And they'll go, oh, like never went out, only studied, felt really like a tool, was a little bit more overweight than I was at any other time in my life, didn't have that many friends, got dumped by my girlfriend at the time. All these things went wrong that year. And they'll go, wasn't that the year that you, I don't know, like set the record for the highest score in torts class? And I'll be like, yeah. And they'll go, everyone was jealous of you. We talked about it. I remember this very clearly. And I'll just think, why would you have been jealous of this person who like was two steps away from running into traffic? You know?
We have a great call from Gonzo. I want to get into this.
Yeah.
Gonzo.
Hey, what's up, Dr. Drew?
Hey, man. Gonzo Shitcock?
Yeah.
Hey, man. How are you? Hey. It's from the Stern Show. Shitcock comes from any place but the Stern Show.
It's a terrible name.
Yeah, I just wanted to call to say what's up, say hi. I haven't talked to you in a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah, I saw that. I know you've weighed in on this before, but I wanted to get your take again because the Stern Show was talking about this too, about the dangers of vaping.
Yeah, they went over the top on Sal. And I understand what Howard was doing. He wants just Sal off all this stuff. And all things being equal, of course, if you can get off everything, it's desirable. And Howard has this idea that addiction is something you can will yourself out of. And real addiction, I wish that were true. It just doesn't work like that. But once somebody's been on a vape product for a while, they should be able to taper down to essentially nothing. I mean, that's the whole idea of vaping. Okay, so here's the deal. So tobacco is the problem. Tobacco is deadly. Tobacco causes heart disease, various kinds of lung cancer, emphysema, chronic bronchitis, tobacco, head and neck cancer, tongue cancers. Tobacco is the devil's product. The way tobacco addicts you is through nicotine. Nicotine is essentially harmless. Tobacco, deadly, nicotine, harmless, which is why routinely throughout my career, I addict people to nicotine gum because the nicotine's harmless.
Really?
I got to get them off the tobacco. Leave them on the gum.
Why are people dying then? Okay, sorry.
Hold on. I got a whole story for you. Yeah, sorry to get into the whole medical discourse here with you, but I got to do it. So in every medical study that has been done, vaping turns out to be superior to all nicotine products to getting people off cigarettes,
really?
Off tobacco. So in terms of getting people off the deadly product, it is the most efficacious. So nicotine vaping is a good thing if it's getting people off tobacco. The problem is the flavored vaping they were using to market to adolescents.
Definitely.
Right? And addicting adolescents to nicotine products, we really don't know what that means. We really don't know what that's going to do, whether that's a gateway to something else. So there's concern about it. There is some literature out there suggesting it's a bad thing. I think for them to get rid of flavored products, because they were not curtailing their marketing towards adolescents.
New York just banned them. First state.
I know.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so I have no problem. Well, the federal government did. So I have no problem with the move to get rid of flavored products. But if you get away to get rid of the nicotine products, you're going to force people back to tobacco.
Oh,
and that's
no.
a fucking catastrophe.
Yeah.
Now, in every single case, Gonzo, of those lung reactions in the Midwest, these were THC products, and the vast majority were black market products.
Oh, that's
it's illegal in those states. It's expensive if you can get it. These black market products, there was a problem with what was in the – not the THC, but the THC vaping product, such that it volatilized into an oil, and the oil coated the oxygenating surface of the lung, so you couldn't exchange oxygen. You're dead. That's it. There's nothing we can do about that.
Uh-huh.
And so it was those – and it's fake news throughout the country. The headlines are totally ridiculous. Vaping is the problem. Vaping is not the problem. A small subset of these black market THC products, 100% of the adverse reactions. There had been a couple of reactions with the flavored products. Remember the popcorn lung?
Yeah, sure.
They got rid of all that. But reasonable to get rid of the flavored products while they evaluate this further because they did not curtail the marketing to the adolescents.
Let me ask you this. Here's a little curveball. What do you think of like bubblegum flavored vape?
Well, where do you think that's directed? You
know what I mean? Like no adult wants that.
Exactly. That although I know lots of adults
I like it. It tastes pretty good.
But you're really? You're 33? You like bubblegum? But would you do like
I'm going to bet your number one though, Gonzo, is mango.
Mango? Actually, I've never had that before.
Oh, everyone loves that.
But
all my adult
is good. Or like tropical fruits, good. I don't smoke it that much.
What do you got, Gary?
I just wanted to make sure to check in with you because
you're fine. Mango.
I was telling my friends like it's not bad for you.
Everybody I know that
always tells me it's fine.
Yeah, all the patients I that really love it love the mango one. Gary, mango.
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 Really?
Yeah. So how much do you use this a day?
I don't even own one. It's just my friend has one. So
you have that one?
Because he used to be addicted to cigarettes. So. I like to smoke it.
Oh, my God. Now, ideally, you want to taper down the nicotine vaped, and you want to get to nothing. I mean, the fact that they're encouraging Sal to get off entirely.
If it's not bad for you, though, can't you just smoke a shitload of it and not worry about it? If it's fun, if you like it.
I mean, theoretically, yeah. I don't like the idea of, you know, it's a bunch of chemicals.
Yeah.
Stuff. It seems to be fine. We'll find out long term. It seems to be okay. It's certainly better than cigarettes. But you know, I wouldn't pick it up.
I mean, there's heat involved even when you smoke something or even when you vape. I don't care what anyone says. If I pick up some CBD vape, I'm like, oh, this is really hot.
Well, it turns out that one of the theories about certain cancers, the mouth and tongue, is related to heat.
I'm not surprised by that.
And so that may be an issue in some of this stuff. If it comes in the mouth hot, is that true?
I don't know. It's hot, yeah. I find it highly uncomfortable.
I got to say, though, Gonzo, to be using it occasionally, I don't think you have to worry about it. I really don't. Okay?
Okay.
All right, buddy.
All right. I was telling all my friends that you said it's fine, so I'll keep telling them. It's safe.
As long as the nicotine one, as long as it keeps them off cigarettes, that's the goal, okay? Where have you been? I haven't heard you on Stern lately. What's going on?
I have a new job now, so I have to wake up early, so I can't really call into the show anymore I used to.
What's your job?
I don't know what to say.
He's working.
Air,
working, working for the FBI.
Dancing with the Stars.
Sex talk.
No, no, just a stupid office job. But I have more responsibility, and I have to get up earlier. So
you're not.
I haven't been able.
Didn't you have a podcast with Eric? High Pitch Eric.
Yeah, High Pitch and I had a podcast, but we stopped. We stopped doing it. We might do one again, but he's really busy these days.
He's busy.
Yeah, he big times me now. He doesn't pick up my calls all the time.
Dang. Busy doing what?
Well, he got ever since he started doing the cameo thing. He's been he has a lot of money now, so he like moved out. He got his own place.
Oh my God! From cameo,
I just heard today he got a car. I didn't even know he had a car. So I heard he had a car,
but this is all cameo.
That's an app I've never entertained the idea of doing.
You should do it. Why not?
Apparently,
yeah,
you get a new car if you go on it.
iPitch is making out.
But is he getting off all the government support?
I don't know. I can't talk about it because I'm not sure. But I told him to try to straighten that out.
Oh,
because you can owe taxes.
Oh, Jesus! This is a catastrophe waiting to happen.
Oh,
all right, Gonzo. Yeah. Thanks for the update. Appreciate it.
All right, good talking to you.
All right, man. Take care. GainsWave, that's right. We actually spoke to a urologist that developed this and has had some great results. It's a subject that does not get enough positive press, erectile dysfunction. Even the way some of the companies offer the ED solutions, they tend to talk about it in sort of shaming ways. Truth is, as many as 30 million men are affected with some form of ED. We say 30% at 30, 40% at 40, 50% at 50, 60% at 60. And of course, these are biological. This is not it's beyond anyone's control. It's part of aging. What's even more devastating is that case of erectile dysfunction affects two people, the man and his partner. And the stress and strain can really affect the relationship. Now, we know all about the pharmaceutical options that have been helping people for 20 years plus. But for some, that treatment offers only temporary solutions, or they lose their effect, or you're looking for more effect, or you don't want to take a pharmaceutical agent, or they're ineffective. And this is all where GainsWave may be a great option. GainsWave is a breakthrough shockwave-based treatment that addresses what may be the root cause of ED, namely a buildup of arterial microplaque in the penis. The buildup can severely impede the blood flow necessary for an erection. GainsWave treatment uses sound waves to break up the microplaque and improve or fully restore blood flow. Non-invasive, drug-free option, very promising. The procedure takes less than 20 minutes. Most men are able to enjoy the benefits the same day. Best part, GainsWave users report a 75% success rate. That is both the users and the clinicians. Impressive. If you think you or your partner could benefit from this treatment, I urge you to look into it. There are over 400 GainsWave providers in North America. So to learn more, go to drdrew.com/wave. That's my website, drdrew.com/WAVE. drdrew.com/wave. Check it out today. Well, you know about TrueCar and you know about the True Cash offer. Don't you? By now, you've heard us talk about it enough. You can do it from your smartphone or your home. Just go to TrueCar, enter your license plate number, and watch your car details pop up. Answer a few questions. And then you get an accurate True Cash offer from a local True Car certified dealer. It is that easy. You can Uber in and then drive in, then Uber home with your check. Or if you want to trade in your car, use True Car to lock in a price for a vehicle that you're interested in. It can be new or used. Learn all about the prices paid in your area so you know you're getting a fair price. And it's a true price because it includes fees and accessories. And it's for an actual vehicle on that True Car certified dealer's lot. When you show up, you ask some questions, get some answers, no surprises here. Then you leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. Remember, that ride can be new or used. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. We'll take another call here. Sam, go ahead. Columbus.
Hey.
Hey, man. How are you?
So...
Yeah.
Good. I was on Twitter and saw Giovanni had liked something in exchange that you had with Mark Horvath.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to reply, but I just wanted to appeal to see if you would consider bringing him on to one of your many programs to discuss the issue of homelessness. He's a founder or co-founder of Invisible People, an account I've been following for a long time on Twitter, where he just literally travels the country or gets submissions from shelters from across the country, and videos talking, people just talking about their experience. And I just think he would bring a perspective to the issue that could only do good. And it's kind of too important of an issue to have, you know, any kind of animosity. I know it kind of low blowed you with a comment about being an entertainer.
Right. My thing is, no one should be discussing this except mental health professionals. Mm. Because if you don't have the training to evaluate these folks, you don't know what you're looking at. Mental health patients don't look or seem different than anybody else. Anybody. You have to know the questions to ask. You have to know how to evoke the symptomatology. So going around and saying, oh, these are nice people, poor things, I get that. They're humans and they're being poor. They're not being served. That's what's driving me insane. Because I've worked so many years in an inpatient setting, I can see the different conditions. I can now, to get a formal diagnosis, I'd have to spend a few minutes evaluating and doing the kind of interviews I know how to do. But going and just saying, do you have mental illness? They all say no. Even if if there's a needle hanging out of their arm, they'll say no. So that's where I find it not a very productive conversation. I have profound empathy and compassion for what's going on, but they're my patients. I know what to do. I know how to make their lives better. We know exactly what to do. It's really simple. and that the no one is doing it. It's like coming upon a giant freeway accident, and I'm the only guy there, and there's no one helping. It's what it feels like, and that's the only thing I'm worried about. It's getting people the care they need. You notice how, Sam, whenever people talk about helping the homeless, they go, "We'll get them in. First, we got to get them in housing, and then we got to get them wraparound services." Who needs wraparound services, Sam? Only mental health patients. If you broke your hip, Sam, you would not get wraparound services. If you had your appendix out, you would not get wraparound services. If you developed an acute psychotic episode, you would get wraparound services. That's what defines a psychiatric hospital. So we're all talking about the same thing, but because nobody has any training, they don't know what they're talking about, even though they're saying the same thing. It makes me crazy. We've got to get them wraparound services. Yes. Yes, that defines a mental health patient.
What are wraparound services?
Psychiatrists, psychologists, vocational rehab, sometimes occupational, physical therapy.
It's
psychiatrists, psychologists, you know, these kinds of
things. Helping the whole person, or at
least with their mental health issues. And it's various different disciplines have to get at them to restore them to function.
Sure, to function, yeah.
Yeah, and there's ways of doing it. Sometimes educational specialists, things like that. And you got to do that. Absolutely, we got to do that. But let's not pretend that if you had
I had shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
I just went home.
Right.
Yeah.
You didn't get wraparound services.
They gave me some pills. I didn't take them because I thought I was tough.
You didn't get wraparound services. So, you know, Mark did not open the dialogue in a productive way, let's say. That's all I'm saying. Let's see. This is Lucia. Lucia?
Lucia.
Lucia. Lucia. I beg your pardon. Lucia.
Hi, Dr. Drew. I'm a huge fan.
I think we used to hear from you, right, a long time ago?
Yes, on your HLN show. I loved it.
Good to hear from you again. What's going on?
Thank you. My question is an addiction question. I have an addict friend who was prescribed Suboxone. And I wondered a couple things. Do you ever prescribe Suboxone? And do you consider someone who takes Suboxone to be sober?
I think it's a very complicated landscape. My concern about Suboxone is the excessive enthusiasm with the prescribing. We haven't really figured out who should be getting it, for how long, at what dose. That really is not a thoroughly understood phenomenon. I have for 20 years treated with abstinence-based treatment. I never had trouble getting people off opiates. It was never a problem. I never thought to myself, God, I got to have something to get people off opiates. Never an issue. Never. And we had very high success rate with our opiate addicts, unless they were chronic pain patients, in which case their doctors would always put them back on the opiates. It became just such a disheartening thing. I can't even tell you. Suboxone is an excellent medication in the setting of chronic pain, so I'm a fan of it there. There's a school of thought that because the relapse rate from opiates are so high, we should never try abstinence because people might relapse and die and inadvertently overdose. It's a viable concern. I have plenty of patients who have told me if I ever had given them Suboxone, they would be dead now because they needed abstinence-based treatment in order to recover. Generally speaking, if somebody can get down around 2 milligrams, they're sober. They can keep taking it if they want. I don't think it makes any difference. At the higher doses, it makes recovery extremely difficult.
Go ahead.
And is that, Lucia, does that make sense to you, all I'm saying?
It does. Thank you.
Yes, you want to get down to a low, low, low dose in a reasonable period of time.
I'm curious why, Lucia, you ask, do you consider someone who's on Suboxone to be sober?
As a friend, she has.
You know what? I went to a treatment place that was they didn't have health care providers there. They considered it totally unacceptable.
Yeah, so I think getting philosophical about it is a mistake.
Yeah.
It's a treatment. It has utility. If we as doctors can get it right, who to give it to, for how long and how much, it'll be great. But the excessive enthusiasm, frankly, by physicians that don't really understand addiction, because it's hard. You got to spend years in it to really get it. And like, for instance, they're being encouraged to have take something like 250 patients now, each physician. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I couldn't handle 30. And I know what I'm doing.
Really?
Yeah.
And so it's just a freaking revolving door.
Right. It's excessive. And so I'm just concerned about the excessiveness of what's going on. That's all. So, but it's a good treatment. It's a, having said all of that, it's a good treatment. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay. Bye.
I wondered about that with her because and I'm obviously not a doctor, but I worry that people go, oh, well, I'm on Suboxone and so I'm not sober, so I'm going to try to get off this so that I'm quote unquote sober.
Well, they could,
and then
could
they
be
just
that
ditch
could be dangerous
their drugs.
Too, right?
Of course, yeah.
So it's a challenging thing.
It's like a weird label.
And there's all, like she was running into, there's philosophies out there where people go, oh, this is the worst thing ever. And but there are more people going, this is the best thing ever. So there's all this, whenever people develop theologies around medical treatment, watch out. It's a dangerous thing. Medical treatments should not be theological.
Yeah, they should
be
practical.
Should be based on evidence. Let's see. Jensen, what's going on?
This is Nathaniel. Sorry.
Oh, I've got it backwards. I have the calls backwards. Sorry, Nathaniel, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Recently divorced and starting new relationships and friendships and whatnot, and found someone that I believe is very nice, you know, and very good and and healthy to be around.
Yeah.
And then kind of wow, you know, things kind of move fast in your brain. And I guess how do you, as a man, when you're fresh out of a long term relationship, approach the idea of beginning a new relationship in a responsible manner, where you don't get carried away and then you know, just get caught up in all those things too fast.
Did you date much when you were younger?
I did not, no. I married when I was 19, and then I was married for 21 years. So
that was a successful relationship. 21 years is a long time.
What happened in that relationship?
I would say it was. Well, you know, just the geographical differences. Just decided that she wanted to take a job that was 1,800 miles away. And
holy.
And then I had a lot of stuff going on here. And,
like
and then,
what?
Well, you know, I mean, we grew up together kind of in a way. So she finally came into her, adulthood where she had gotten her master's degree and then finally had developed a career.
Yeah.
And then had an opportunity where she could go, you know, earn money and then provide herself with a level of independence that she felt was important for her.
Right.
And so I wished her well and I said, well, go ahead.
And how long have you known this new person?
Excuse me? I'm sorry.
How long have you known the new person?
About 7-8 weeks. It's been pretty short.
Yeah.
Pretty short amount of time. But it's gone really, really well. You know, we've eaten dinner tonight, you know, and then like every night for like virtually almost every night since we've met. And then, you know, kind of not burying ourselves into each other or anything like that, but kind of, I don't know. I'm like,
close though, Nathaniel, close to that.
Yeah. It's pretty, you know, serial monogamy, we call this, and it's okay. It's not a, you know, it's not a dangerous thing, but it always makes you wonder if you're jumping from one to another just because you don't want to be alone.
Yeah. He's single. You've never been single for more than X number of weeks as an adult, right?
No, not really. No. I haven't really played the field. You know what I mean?
And you might, you might not even want to do that, but you might want to just enjoy dating, enjoy meeting people, enjoy being a separate person since you have this opportunity. Or you may not. I mean, maybe that you want to be a serial monogamist. Maybe you found the right person. It's hard for us to. I would never presume to tell you what to do with your life, but I don't know. If it were me.
Well, I guess here's another deeper question, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm 40, and then the potential, you know, partner is 31 years old, and I have 4 children.
Oh boy. Oh,
she has 0 children.
Oh boy.
I'm financially 100% situated where my baggage is handled, and she is 31 with 0 children, never been married.
She will want to have a child.
I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. I would welcome that idea, and that I am, you know, I've worked hard enough where I believe that I am capable of making sure that that's an appropriate thing when the time comes. But I just don't want to run away with all the thoughts in my head and then get caught up with all that stuff. And I go, oh, we're going to go all do all this, you know. And
you're already caught up.
Do your kids live with you? Your kids live with you, or do they live with your ex-wife who lives 1,800 miles away?
Well, my daughter is currently with my wife, and my sons are all of age where they're in
college.
Yeah. Okay. You know, so
gotcha.
Grant, well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say names. You know, my one son goes to Georgia Tech, and the other one goes to engineering school in Marietta. You know, it's just
anyway, okay. they're out of that.
They're doing fine.
Yeah.
Never mind. Sorry. So, I mean, it's kind of at a point where I don't want to get too serial monogamy. Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, you might want to
plan it right.
Yeah, but you know, you might want to read a book called Overcoming Love Addiction. It's by Pia Melody. I think that's she wrote it, and it gets at some of the issues that you're contending with here. And if it seems that you know you're at the mercy of some of these processes, you might want to get a therapist and talk it through and see if, you know, there are ways to manage all this in a sort of conscious way. You may want to date other people.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're in pretty deep with this woman already. So I, you know, might not go over so well, but I don't know. My instinct would be, it sure would be nice if you're with somebody that was more at your stage of life.
And also you don't know yourself outside of the relationship. So you don't really know. You're trying to kind of pick up where you left off, but really it's a new person. But you have to bring your own half into the equation. And that half hasn't necessarily developed independently for 21 years.
Therapy might do something.
A little therapy wouldn't hurt.
And certainly some, just as you said, playing the field. I'm just saying being a separate person and enjoying hanging out with other people and seeing what you are, what you like. You don't even know yet.
100%.
I don't know, Nathaniel. We're not going to make the call for you, but good luck, man. Thanks for the call. Jensen.
Yeah, Dr. Drew. My call might be a little bit similar, only more extreme than the last gentleman's circumstance.
Go ahead.
I'm 51. About a year and a half ago, I was married for 28 years. I got married pretty young. The marriage really was sort of fading, and at the tail end of it fading, I met someone who happened to be about 15 years younger than me. Mm. We got involved, and I subsequently got divorced, and I've been with this young woman who has two small children. I have three adult children for about a year and a half. It's been a whirlwind, but one of the things that's really become sort of a stickler is that she drinks minimally two bottles of wine a night, sometimes more, and does not believe she's an alcoholic, doesn't believe it interferes with her life, which it doesn't interfere with her work life, and claims that she needs it because she's in a pretty demanding. She's a, without getting too specific, she's basically a first responder, so a very, you know, stressful job. But it's become sort of a wedge between us. And when I brought it up once, she sort of went into meltdown mode. So now we're at sort of a crossroads here.
Is there alcoholism in her family, one of the parents?
Right,
she's an alcoholic. Yeah, there's no debating it. She's an alcoholic. The question is, does she want to do something about it? And then the question is, do you want to stay in it with somebody who's a practicing alcoholic? It's really that simple.
Yeah.
And if you stay in it, it's going to be important that you do something active on your own. Get a therapist or go to Al-Anon, because this disease will suck you in too.
Mm-hmm.
But it will progress. Alcoholism is not a very static illness. It gets worse. Two bottles of wine a night for a female. Females are five times higher risk of getting cirrhosis. They lack an enzyme to break the alcohol down to a less toxic compound. So they get alcoholic liver disease very readily. So she's, you know, at risk of having medical problems. But it's kind of on you. She has been on, you know, you've brought it to her attention. She's made it clear she doesn't want to do anything. It's often cumulative loss that eventually gets people to do something. But Al-Anon, therapist, you know, in the meantime, if you're committed to this thing.
Yeah. I think I knew what the answer was, but just needed
and you can be very compassionate with her. You don't have to be confrontative. It's like, hey, I know this. What's going on? I know what this is. It's hard to watch you harm yourself. Women get more trouble from this. I'm watching you hurt yourself. It's very difficult. It's very painful to watch. And I will tell you that going to Al-Anon, you'd be shocked. You watch her reaction. She'll be stunned. Like, what? And first they go from like sort of out, weird kind of a confusion, outrage to, oh, my God, there really must be a problem. And he's not going to take my BS anymore. He's going to – all the obfuscation of being an alcoholic, you aren't going to put up with that anymore. And you're going to your move to take care of yourself has the highest probability of causing her to take care of herself. It's kind of interesting. Thanks, buddy. Sorry about that, Jensen. LaCroix Sparkling Water. Who does not know about these guys? I really do dig these guys. They are low. They're zero calorie, most of them. They're a sweetener and sodium innocent beverages with nothing artificial. They're a healthier alternative at LaCroix for you and your lifestyle. Visit LaCroixWater.com for a full list of retailers. 25 flavors confirmed to be derived from natural sources with natural fruit essences. I don't know why they do it, but it's rather uncanny. Zero calories, zero sweetener, zero sodium. They call it innocent. 15 LaCroix flavors, including hibiscus, hello beautiful, mango, apricot, passion fruit. Of course, it also includes 6 LaCroix curate flavors, pina fraise, prom baya, very elaborate, very interesting, delicious flavors. Newly added flavors, Nicola theme, coconut cola, cubana. They've thought of it all, and they do it again with the innocence of no calories, no sweetener, no sodium. LaCroix Sparkling Waters and LaCroix Curate Sparkling Waters are gluten-free, vegan, kosher, non-GMO. LaCroix products labels are changing to comply with new federal regulations and nutritional standards. As part of these changes, the labels state that each is a Whole 30 non-GMO and produced without BPA liner. Important. For more information, go to LaCroix Community on social. That is at LaCroix, LACROIX Water. At LaCroix Water, or check out the website, LaCroixWater.com. Well, Blinkist, of course, it's hard to sit down and read an entire book, and especially nonfiction books, which I just love. But Blinkist is unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can listen to. And you can read them as well. Successful people, business leaders, well-known folks are reading a lot of books, and Blinkist has made it easy for you to accumulate the knowledge in these books more efficiently. That's right, Alec, Blinkist, because it takes less than 15 minutes. I feel like I can fast-track information that I don't have other ways to get it, and this is such a convenient way to do so. Of course, there are lots of nonfiction books out there. You know what I'm talking about, How to Win Influence People, The 4-Hour Workweek, Becoming by Michelle Obama even, Fire and Fury, Inside the Trump White House. All available in a distilled, bulleted format. And with Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to their massive library of condensed nonfiction books. All the books you want, all at one low price. And for right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Drew to start your 7-day free trial. Again, 7 days, unlimited free access. Crazy. To read or listen to Blinkist's massive library of books. And if you're not satisfied, well, don't continue. It's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. You've got nothing to lose. Go to Blinkist.com/DREW. Start your free 7-day trial. Again, that is Blinkist.com/Drew. If you like my show, you're going to love The Hollywood Filter on Podcast One. Join Jessica Hall and Mel Lamprey as they peel back the filter and see what's really going on in Hollywood. From top LA beauty trends to events and celebrity goings-on, get a glimpse of the unfiltered Hollywood that you rarely see. You thought you knew LA, but do you? Download new episodes of The Hollywood Filter every week on Apple Podcast and Podcast One. Sarah, Ohio.
Hi, Dr. Drew.
Hi there.
I am 30, and about 5 years ago, I was in a motorcycle accident where I suffered a spinal cord injury and a mild traumatic brain injury.
Oh boy, what's the nature of the spinal cord injury?
It's a C4 level.
C4?
Complete.
Oh my goodness, so she's quadriplegic.
Oh yeah, no. Completely, from the shoulders down.
You sound great.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. I mean, right now I'm on one of my ups. It's been quite a rocky 5 years, to say the least.
I bet.
And my thing is, you know, I know much of it is probably, you know, obviously circumstantial, you know, it's really hard to adjust to such a traumatic change. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, you know, I don't know that much about traumatic brain injuries or where exactly, you know, my head made contact. I went head first into a tree. Oof. And, yeah, but the only injuries that I had was, the break in my neck and a scratch on my forehead. So I'm assuming that I really did hit it head on. Yeah. And I wonder how much of this, you know, I've had extreme bouts of depression, like very dark and deep moments that lasted the longest stint so far was this whole last year.
And that seems reasonable to the circumstance, no?
Yeah, for the most part. And the, you know, trials and tribulations that come along with the adjustment, it's just crazy. But from where I hit my head and I got the brain injury, I wonder how much of my depression might be caused.
It's hard to tell, right? We don't know that. Traumatic brain injuries definitely are associated with depression and panic and sleep disturbances. But, you know, dealing with a extreme life change, life circumstance change like this also is associated with that. Though a lot of the happiness literature on spinal cord injury shows that the level of sort of life satisfaction does tend to come back up. But then here you are. You're sort of better right now. And to be depressed in response, it would not be unusual. Were you treated for the depression?
No, it's kind of been something I really put off. I've only recently become better about actually speaking about my feelings and my depression. Mm. I never could talk to anybody about it.
Why not? Why not?
It's just, it was almost too much for my own brain. I just couldn't get it out.
Made it too real?
Yeah, or it's just, I didn't even know how to describe it.
Yeah.
Honestly, like there was just so much static in my head over it.
Yeah. And you say the craziness of adjusting to the C4 injury. What are you talking about? The skin breakdown or catheters or that kind of stuff? Or
no, just emotionally. Like, you know, dealing with. Before this injury, I was extremely, extremely independent. Like, actually to a fault, before this injury, ironically enough, I was reading a book about, you know, the different dependencies and trying to work on being a more kind of codependent person. And then this happened and I became a completely dependent person.
You mean you were like an addict?
Or independent. No, like I was just very independent. I had a lot of pride, I guess. I prided myself on being able to do anything I could on my own.
Oh.
Like moving out of the house, joining the army.
Mm. It's an identity shift that you're having to deal with in a major, major way.
Yeah, complete shift.
Yeah, and along with that question about the brain injury is, you know, part of it is, you know, the central nervous system like that, it doesn't recover. And so I think between the depression and the hit to the head, you know, my brain has been rewired and I've only recently, you know, throughout this whole thing, started antidepressants.
Good. But we, you know, and because, you know, feelings come from the body, right? Mm-hmm. And to some extent, it's the autonomic nervous system that feeds that to the brain. But a big piece obviously comes in through the central nervous system too. So we don't really know what it does to our emotional systems really when there's a complete transection like that. I mean, you're cut off from your feelings also in a weird way. And yet your body is still generating feelings. It's a very, very challenging state to be in.
You strike me as very tough.
Yeah, me too.
You were in the army, you did the whole motorcycle thing, and now you're recovering well, Frank, by pretty much any measure from something that's extremely traumatic. So I know that you're kind of beating yourself up a little bit about not being as independent as before, but I would look at the whole picture, and you strike me as very resilient and very, very tough. I mean, I don't know you. You just called in, right? So, but that's my first impression.
Yeah, you can feel that.
Yeah, I can feel it, definitely.
So my question would be, Sarah, what's going on socially? How do you get social connection?
Well, you know, at one point before I very recently got out of this very dark place, I would go to things like that I could most easily with my friends, like concerts, or, you know, I would go out to the bar with them and do karaoke even.
Nothing tough about that. She's not tough. I don't know. Talk. We're just saying that's tough.
Doing the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song. I take it all back.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's my only concern for you really would be that you stay deeply as connected as possible.
Yeah.
Because it's disconnected you from your body, but it can't disconnect you socially. That's the piece that's got to stay. You've got to make that happen.
Yeah, I know. It's just sometimes I feel like such a burden
Stop it. That's your old stuff.
Yeah, that's a story you've made up around your injury. I guarantee you your friends aren't thinking, oh no, Sarah's coming out with us tonight. They're just thinking, oh, good. Sarah's finally going to come out with us tonight.
She's so awesome.
Yeah, we get tons of attention when Sarah comes out because we take up the whole dance floor. Yeah. I guarantee you that the story you've made up about your injury and who you are as a result, because you're so different than who you were before, is completely different from how other people experience you.
Right, but this is what she was afraid of being before.
Of course,
before. Yeah,
of course.
So she doesn't want to be that to anybody, but it's fine. It's fine, Sarah. And get more friends. Get new friends.
That's right. Hell yeah.
I just see that as your main job going forward for a while. Okay?
Yeah, go out more. Stay connected more. I appreciate this.
And call back. Next time we call up for calls. I got to wrap this up now. But it's really, really – it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you a lot, you guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. You got it. Good luck, Sarah.
She's a badass.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't accept it, but she's a badass.
Well, no, I think she wants to be the badass the way she was badass.
Right, but it's...
She's a different kind of badass.
This is a different kind of badass.
I know, man. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, Jordan, see, did you have fun?
Yeah, I love this. I love this. I do advice every Friday, but it's not live. I take letters. This is a different level because you can ask them questions back, and I love this.
Yeah,
it was great.
Well, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thanks
for
having
you on. Last time we were on with Indra Viscontis, who's
that's right.
I got to get her back and talk about music.
She's
a genius.
Literally.
Have you seen her pod? You got to follow her pod.
I have, yeah. Oh, I love it.
Good. Well, Jordan, give us all the particulars where we can find
your
stuff.
Sure, yeah, the Jordan Harbinger Show. I talk more when I know what I'm talking about, so I defer to Dr. Drew. But on my show, I interview amazing people, and I'm on social media at Jordan Harbinger, the Jordan Harbinger Show, wherever you find your podcast, Podcast One, as I've been instructed to say.
Fair enough.
Or,
Apple,
of course,
Apple iTunes or whatever.
That's right, Apple iTunes and Podcast One, or jordanharbinger.com.
All right, man. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
The Jordan Harbinger Show is one of the most popular interview podcasts in the world. On the show, your host, that's me, Jordan Harbinger, deconstructs the playbooks of the most successful people on earth and shares their strategies, perspectives, and practical insights with you so that you can apply them for yourself. I'll teach you how to read body language and master nonverbal communication. I'll teach you how to network and negotiate. Recently, I interviewed an FBI hostage negotiator who teaches us how to get people to like and trust you. I also had neuroscientists and even Navy SEALs tell us how to develop resilience and mental toughness. Of course, we've also got amazing stories from people that have lived them, from crazy kidnapping stories and going undercover with the CIA to illusionists who can seemingly program our brains. The Jordan Harbinger Show covers everything that will help you upgrade your brain so you can become a high performer both at home and at work. In fact, every single episode of the show has worksheets that you can use to make sure you're internalizing and applying what you learn from the guests. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show, in which I interview our very own Dr. Drew. And while you're listening, go subscribe to the Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com. There's also a link in the episode notes that'll take you there. I put my heart and soul into this one, and I know you're going to love it. Self-esteem obviously doesn't care if you're successful.
Right. Self-esteem is something established, I think, by age 5, if I remember right.
Oh, that's and depressing.
Yeah. And it turns out, I mean, you can enhance it and you can move it a little bit, but most of it is set early. And mine was bad. But it doesn't bother me, and I sort of use it. Like, it makes me double-check myself. It makes me, you know, never feel like I've done enough or good enough. I might use it as a motivator, which is painful when you get a lot of negative stuff flying at you. But it's kind of nice if, you know, if you want to motivate to do something good, it helps you.
Thanks again for listening. And remember, you can find The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.